Almost, just a second here.
I'm not doing it for yard sign. Not doing it for yard, Peggy, I'm here, I'm going to bed. Do you want one? Yard sign?
We're ready.
We can wait till Dietmar comes back.
Well, be careful because you're going out to the world.
Okay.
Put it in my neighbor's,
There you go. Hey, we are going out over the, live stream.
We are being recorded, we are being streamed.
We are live.
This is an opportunity for me to do my audition song for American Idol.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do it.
I'm too old for Idol.
Could you sign for it?
I could sign for it, I could do it.
You can do that over the screen.
Can you sign and sing at the same time?
Yeah, but, I mean, one language is getting sacrificed, yes.
Freed had the same car as Gary.
She was quite slowly.
I'm signing autographs at 5:55 PM today.
She signed for Mayor Wheeler.
I signed for the city club, and he just happened to be the presenter.
Oh, okay.
Amen.
It's available on YouTube.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
Nice color.
Yeah, thank you, it feels warm.
It looks warm.
Yeah.
If it was a different color, it wouldn't be as warm.
I know.
Eric, did you get my order for the pitcher of margaritas for tomorrow?
Okay, this is to call the city council work session for May 16th order. Peggy, roll call, please.
Jacoby?
Here.
Parker?
Here.
Paul?
Here.
Sawyer?
Here.
Goble?
Here.
Bateo?
Here.
And Kaplan?
Here.
Testing.
Spencer. Tonight, we've got a work session that will be talking about the wastewater treatment plant master plan, progress that's been made on that. That's going to be followed by an urban renewal meeting at 5 o'clock to discuss the RFP for the urban renewal district and try to get that finalized and out. And then we have a council meeting at 6 p.m. tonight. And unfortunately, I apologize for this, but we have a couple items that we want to add to the agenda tonight for the 6 o'clock meeting. And this would be done just before the consent calendar. But one would be to add the rate review for Thompson Sanitary Services on that agenda. And then the second issue, the city attorney has asked for an executive session immediately following the close of the regular meeting to consult with legal counsel regarding legal rights and duties of a public body with regard to current litigation or litigation likely to be filed. So those are the two changes that we'll be asking at the 6 o'clock meeting for the council to consider.
Spencer, can you clarify again when that, with the second item, where that would fall in terms of letter and number or letter?
Yeah, so basically, and I covered that, I'm suggesting that 6D be the Thompson Sanitary and 6E would be when the motion would be made to go into executive session, but the executive session would be held at the conclusion of the regular meeting.
At the end.
At the end. So at this point, for the work session, I would like to have Public Works Director David Powell and Andrew Grant, who is our wastewater treatment plant superintendent, to provide an update to the council on where we're heading with the wastewater treatment master plan. So I'll turn it over to both of you.
Okay, is this on? I guess
yep.
It is. Good afternoon. Good to be here. I'm just going to give you a brief update on the wastewater treatment master plan.
Not too brief because we have an hour.
But we also would like to not eat on camera or anything.
Right, right. I'll make it too brief, but it's not. I don't have a lot to say. Apologies, I did have a PowerPoint presentation that I prepared. Apparently, I didn't send it or it wasn't received. I'm not sure what, but and it wasn't that that long anyway. So I'll stretch this out as much as I can. Although it's really going to be kind of boring, I think, at some point if I stretch it too far. So we had a kickoff meeting with the Wastewater Master Plan on the 30th of March. This is in your staff report. We've had several meetings since then, virtual meetings with the consultants. We've concentrated on projections of growth that we've seen since the master plan actually started back in 2018. If you recall, the planning was kind of suspended in 2018 after it was determined that some loading to the treatment plant was really causing some issues there. And so we picked it back up again, you know, this last year in 2021. The council approved the contract with Brown and Caldwell back in December. And we've been working on the master plan ever since. We've had some pretty significant requests for information from the consultant to update the collection system master plan. And then we've been working on, like I said, some updates to the flow and loading, as well as population projections and flow and loading to the treatment plant over time coming up. We've also had some interesting conversations about hauled waste, loading, and where we're going to put that waste. Right now, we haul waste from septage haulers that comes into the wastewater treatment plant. And then all of our waste that's vacuumed out with our vector truck goes also to the sewer plant. We're talking about having those facilities actually consolidated at Northside. But then we've since determined that we're going to go ahead and just take that on to the wastewater plant because of the odors and logistics of actually treating that waste. So that was kind of a significant finding that we have developed so far. let's see, what else? So we've been working on biosolids alternatives also, what to do with the biosolids at the treatment plant for final disposal. It's kind of a challenge here on the coast because composting is more like a dry weather type of activity, and we have wet weather here on the coast. So our consultant, Kennedy Jenks, who's working for Brown and Caldwell, are experts in biosolids processing and disposal in coastal communities. And that's why we hired them for this particular work. So I brought a few graphs with me just to show you kind of what we've looked at so far. And one of them is up on the screen now. I don't know if you have do you have it on your screens? Okay. So you can see between 20 and this graph here is for the growth within the urban growth boundary. So you can't take these EDUs and say, oh, those are the ones that were actually attached to the wastewater plant. That's a smaller number. So this is total EDUs within the urban growth boundary, and these are developed by the university, Portland State University. So you can see that we had pretty significant growth between 2015 and 2020. We talked about that being about a 15% growth rate in that five-year period, which is significant for this area. And then you can see how the graph kind of tails off and tapers to a flat up at about 13,000 EDUs. That's, again, within the urban growth boundary. But it gives us an idea of what we're going to be seeing in terms of the rate of growth to the wastewater treatment plant. The next graph,
over. We don't service a total growth boundary, do we, though?
No, not to the wastewater plant. And that's why I'm saying this is for the urban growth boundary.
Yeah.
What we need to do is I'm going to get with Derek on exactly how many EDUs we've sold in the service area for the wastewater plant in the last 5 years. See how that corresponds with this graph here.
David, can you just confirm?
That's actually loading to the treatment plant.
ERU and EDU are interchangeable?
These are, I'm sorry, equivalent residential units?
I want to confirm that I'm understanding right. Okay, thank you.
I said EDU, equivalent dwelling units. These are, it's the same. It's the residential units. So any questions on this graph here? At all, it's pretty self-explanatory. The next graph, I'm going to let Andrew talk about, because you saw this in the last update that I did, but I didn't probably do a very good job on explaining exactly what this is.
All right, thank you, David.
Can you hear?
I don't know if your mic is on.
Holding it down? Okay. So this is the graph of the BOD loading, which is an indicator of the strength of the matter coming into the treatment plant. And it used to be a pretty regular cycle where it would be higher in the summer, lower in the winter. We're seeing that the winter lows don't really persist, that we don't have them anymore. There was a COVID effect where loading went down for a short period in the last couple of years. But on the whole, the rate of increase is, I think it's annualized at over 7% increase in loading. We've largely dealt with industrial loads. You know, we have a pretreatment program in place. We have an agreement with Rogue and a permit that limits the amount of waste they can discharge, that would be BOD, to the treatment facility. And in the time that we've regulated them, population growth or some other factor has taken up that capacity. So we paused the wastewater treatment plant master plan in order to address industrial loads from Rogue, because that was going to be the big driver in our design. We've dealt with Rogue, and now we have something else that's eating up our capacity, and we think it's people. So that's why the population estimates are really important as we look at this planning effort, is because we really need to nail down where the load is coming from so we can plan out the facilities plan to make sure we have capacity before the people get here. We can't build out the treatment plant as an after effect because it has a long lead time to do all these projects. How'd I do, Dave?
Good. So here's the...
This is what comes out the back end of the plant, so to speak. It's the biosolids production in dry matter. Again, there was a little bit of dip in the COVID era, but on the whole, we're seeing that same rate of increase. So what comes in must come out. We run a bunch of other ratios on a monthly basis about how much comes in and how much comes out, and it's a pretty steady ratio after we've dealt with Rogue. So Rogue was discharging a lot of sugars. Now we're seeing that waste has changed characteristic, and it's more typical of what we'd see from residences and people. So the importance of the biosolids production is that as we look at the next slides, you'll see that the centrifuges and the biosolids production equipment is undersized. So we don't have enough existing capacity now to deal with these wastes. So we can't just run the machines on a 40-hour work week. We're running extended hours in order to make the stuff keep coming out the back end, so to speak. So when we look at our capacity assessment, we'll see that the solids loading was designed for a lower level. And when the plant was first constructed in 2002, the city of Newport did 220 tons of biosolids. Last year, we pushed almost 800. So from 220 to 800 in about 20 years. And that we expect that to that growth to continue.
So you can see that over time, you know, like Andrew just said, the loading to the treatment plant continues to grow. And when I first got here, I toured the treatment plant, and when I saw the solids processing area, I thought to myself, well, this treatment plant's going to need some help, because it looked like it was struggling in that area, and I think our studies so far have proven that out. So this next graph is the one that I wanted Brown and Caldwell to give us, which is an important graph, and I'll try to explain it. So on the left-hand side, there's equivalent residential units on the vertical axis. On the horizontal axis is the different unit processes within the treatment plant. To the far left, you can see the north side pump station. Screens and pumps are there. And then there's the influent pump station. And then the treatment plant and processes are from the middle to the right. The horizontal straight lines, the black one on the left and the purple one on the right, one is higher than the other. Those indicate the current loading or the current connected number of ERUs or EDUs to the treatment plant. So you can see on the left-hand side to north side, there's about 2,600 or so that's coming through north side. The treatment plant picks up north side as well as South Beach and these other areas. Those totals are close to 5,000. And wherever you see the horizontal line above the yellow line, that's beyond the design capacity of the treatment plant. So the vertical yellow line, the vertical yellow bars are the current firm capacity, which means that if in a treatment plant there's normally redundancy, you have two processes. One is the main process, and then as loading goes up or if that process is down for some reason, the other process can come online. So both processes together are total. One is firm, which is the design capacity. So you can see the screens at Northside Pump Station are right at the firm capacity. So if one screen's out, you still have the other screen to use. And then the blue is the total capacity. That's both screens together.
Hey, David, would you explain, so they understand the context of the Northside Station, kind of the flow of wastewater? Sure. Because it's a kind of convoluted process. So
Northside picks up everything north of that location, which is Nye and about 6th or 7th Street. Everything north of 9 and 7th comes into the north side pump station.
But doesn't even stuff from the bayfront get pumped up? Everything actually north of the bay goes through that station, I believe, so.
Okay, let me try some more.
Yeah.
my understanding is it comes to the north side pump station. Then from the north side pump station, it's pumped over the hill to the bayfront pump station and pumps over to the treatment plant, to the influent pump station, and then up to the treatment plant. There's sewer that from north side south that comes into the bayfront lift station and to Nye Beach lift station.
Let me rescue here a little bit.
Okay,
go so ahead. The north side pump station is the old wastewater treatment plant, and all the gravity sewers north of the bay go there. Bayfront pump station lifts up to north side, and then it goes back under the bay to South Beach. So all flow from the north side of the bay goes to the north side pump station, and then it's carried via force main under the bay to the South Beach, where it comes in gravity to the station. So almost 90% of flow comes through north side. 90% of our infrastructure is on the north side of the bay. And a lot of the load, the grit and the screenings comes out at the north side pump station.
Copy that. What he said. Okay, so I'll stick to the graph and explain what's on the graph. So the most important part in this graph is the vertical lines at the top, the black line and the purple line. Any of those vertical bars underneath really should be at or above that horizontal line. So you can see it says, like right in the middle of the graph, it says unit capacity shortfall. So like for the headwork screens at the wastewater treatment plant, that shortfall is almost 100% for one screen. So if you have both screens running, then you have capacity. But the problem is that if one of those screens goes out now, you don't have the screening capacity to treat the waste. When you come over to the secondary clarifiers, you've got, one clarifier is about, 50% of the capacity. You have to have both clarifiers in the wintertime to work. What that means is, in the wintertime, when we have those high flows coming through a treatment plant, if one of the clarifiers goes down, you don't have a treatable, you don't have the wastewater plant to treat the waste. You're going to get flow through, your solids flow through those clarifiers, and it's not going to be able to treat the waste properly. So we're really beyond the capacity of the treatment plant, and with total capacity, we can treat the waste, but with firm capacity only, we can't. So what it does is it just puts the city at risk. You know, if one of those unit processes goes out in the wintertime or during that high loading period, then you can't treat the waste to and meet our waste discharge requirements. So that's why we're doing this master plan. Illustrates what the issues are at the treatment plant. Where it starts really getting evident is on the right-hand side in the solids stream part, those last four bars. You can see the centrifuges, the firm capacity is about 1,200, and you have a connected capacity of almost 5,000. So even the firm capacity is a lot less than what the actual connected EDUs are. So it just puts us, again, a lot more risk. And what it means and why we're able to actually maintain treatment right now is because those screens, both screens are running extended hours during the week. And so they're running extended hours way over what their design capacity is, and they're wearing out quickly. What it does is, it puts the city at risk of not being able to treat the waste if one of those units goes down. And we kind of talked about this for the last couple of updates. We talked about the assessment at the wastewater plant, how the solids processing part was really kind of in trouble. And we're gonna be, coming to the council with equipment requests if those unit processes go out, because we're not going to be able to treat the waste if we don't have them online. So,
do you have that in your planned and submitted budget for to prepare for equipment replacement and such?
So that's what we, if you'll remember back since I got here, we've done two projects. One is the conveyor that takes the sludge to the finished sludge to the conveyance area. But then the other one was the aeration basin motors and drives. We came in and the city council approved those drives. That's for the aeration basin part. For the centrifuges and the solids part, it's really, we're holding off on that until the master plan is done, not completely done. They're actually working on right now speccing what we would do for centrifuges. And the reason is because these are very expensive units, and it really, we don't want to spend money on a patch right now that's going to be really expensive that we're not going to use later. So what we're trying to do is make sure that what we are designing now is going to be able to be used in the long term at the treatment plant. As a result of the master plan. So one of the things that has been real nice about the project that we did for the conveyor, we took the serpentine belt out at the treatment plant and put in a conveyor system. We talked about this. This has been a project that we just got completed. What has really helped us is actually making it so that the solids process is more efficient, I guess I'd say, and so it's buying us a little bit of time. So we're making steps towards making the old system that we have more effective, so we can get through this period of time through this master planning process and be able to actually spec, you know, the machines that are going to be long-term, and we're not wasting money by just trying to patch something.
Cynthia, did you have a question?
Yeah, yes, I do have a question. I would just like you to clarify for me and for the general public so that we can all understand the importance of having this equipment working properly. Say, for instance, if there would be a failure during the winter, like you said, when the shrimp plants were running, I mean, what exactly would be polluted? The bay, the ocean? I mean, where would this untreated waste go?
Yeah, it goes to the ocean. It goes right off of Sinai Beach is where the discharge is. So,
like down from the turnaround and
yes, that's correct.
That area.
Yeah.
That's why there's a jetty in an odd place. It's covering up that the both pipes, one from the wastewater treatment plant, one from the mill in Toledo.
So this graph illustrates where we're, you know, one of our first deliverables from with the wastewater master plan. It was to just, you know, say, where are we in terms of capacity and then total loading. So this is a good result right here, but it illustrates the fact that we're behind in the planning process and we need to really be diligent going forward. Andrew and his crew are doing a great job out there, you know, keeping that treatment plant running. We've so far been able to, you know, meet our discharge requirements through DEQ, but it hasn't been without a lot of hard work. And these guys have been doing a great job out there. My concern is that this treatment plant is able to continue to operate while we do this planning process and then do go through design and then actually purchase the equipment and get the plant you know, up to capacity. It's going to take time to do that. In the meantime, we have more loading and we have more you know, load to the treatment plant, more flow to the treatment plant. So it's gonna be a challenge. So, anything else?
Can I ask you a question, David?
Yeah.
I've heard Andrew's answer. I want to hear yours. So, this increase in loading of solids and organic compounds coming into the plant. What do you think are the sources of that, other than the brewing industry and higher peaks of tourism and hotel occupancy and things like that? Is that what it? Or is it soil intrusion in the sewer pipes, or is it all of those things? What's our ace in the hole here, figuring out why these charts are trending upwards so much against a population that has changed a little bit, but not as much to make up for that difference in growth and inflow into the plant?
Well, I don't think it's inflow and infiltration. It's not, the biological loading is coming from human waste. So you know, increased tourism. I think it's increased occupancy. Where I came from in California, there was a development that was about 60% occupied. All of the homes are sold. During the pandemic, people were working from home. You know, a lot of people from the Bay Area were working from their homes up in the Murphy's area, and suddenly occupancy went to 80%, 85%. So I can see that happening here. It's a really popular tourist destination, and there's a lot of homes here that people are, there could be second homes, and they decided to come here and work full time. So I think that's part of it. Just growth. We've had some pretty significant growth in the last, you know, 5 years. It's not a lot of equivalent dwelling units, but that does contribute to the overall loading to the treatment plant. I think that's just, it's growth and infill and occupancy.
I have a question too. Is what would be an alternative if something is not working all of a sudden something breaks, do we have an alternative?
Almost everything on this graph has broke, and we fixed it. But the analogy Dave made is like changing the tire on a car that's going down the road at 60 miles an hour. Because the load is so high, we can't turn anything off for extended periods of time. So we've gotten to be pretty gymnastic about our operations and that we're being flexible and doing things. So we've broken centrifuges, we've broken clarifiers, we've broken the pasteurization. Everything that's under that capacity is already broke. We fixed it in place. The planning effort is really important because as we're fixing things, that's really expensive. If we're able to plan ahead and get bigger centrifuges, for example, that run overnight, then our labor requirement goes down because they're automated. It's not wise to just keep on fixing it as it breaks. We need to consolidate into a master planning effort.
How soon can you get materials that they can fast, or I mean, and also staff to get there to fix it? What are the metrics of, you know, when it needs a replacement?
So staff has been an issue. We're down to half of the operators that we have budgeted. We just onboarded somebody last week, so we're excited about that. The parts situation has become pretty perilous across all industries. We're waiting 7 to 8 weeks for things that used to be in stock. Part of my budget request for next year was to stock up some parts. There's a parts request to put things on the shelf. Because of the high criticality of our items, high critical items have spare parts. But we've been fabricating things. We've been borrowing from one place to do something else. The aeration basin refurbishment project that was funded by you guys, we appreciate it. That was a complete wipe the board. We know that all these parts are going bad. We need to fix them all preemptively. We're going to do it all. So we bought everything, and it took about 4 months to get all the parts in place.
So, like, right?
I'm sorry. Does the master plan include something like this, like, you know, replacement and, you know, time?
Yes, it does. We have a criticality assessment. So we went through and said, what are our most critical items? How are they imperiled by loading? And then making a plan to deal with them.
So, yeah, we have this initial analysis where we're looking at what are those really critical pieces of equipment and what would we purchase early to get those so that they're reliable now. But then they can also be used as the master plan builds out too. So we're not buying equipment now just to fix something critical and only to not be able to use it later. We don't want to do that. So that's the planning effort that's going on right now. You've got an item on the agenda, or I've got an item on the agenda in the regular meeting for the clarifier number 2, rehab. That's another critical piece that's got to be done. It's got to be done this summer because we have to have both clarifiers in the wintertime. This clarifier is not going to last through another season. So like I say, we're keeping up with those critical items, but it's quite an effort to do that. Any other questions on this graph? Yes.
I'm not understanding so the clarifiers you need more in the winter.
Right.
Yeah, it would seem like the heavy usage would seem to be in the summer. So why?
So I'll take a shot at it, and then you can correct me if I'm wrong. So in the summertime is your high biological loading period. It's the lowest flow period. So your aeration basins are going to work overtime in the summertime. And so that's why we had to get these aeration basins up to snuff, and we just bought the equipment, or it was 4 months ago now. Now we're able to get that equipment in. Andrew's got a project going for the next 30 days to get those all installed. In the wintertime, when you have high flow, the biological load goes, it doesn't go down. The concentration goes down because you have more water.
Is that because of the rain?
Water, yes. Okay. Rain, inflow and infiltration into the system. So now you have the hydraulic load coming into the treatment plant that's really high. So you have to have the proper size tanks to be able to take that flow. Otherwise, the tanks won't settle. So these are like big white spots in the pipe, so to speak. So when the flow comes through, it's the white spot in the pipe has less flow through it in the summertime, so it settles nice. In the wintertime, it's really coming in, so you gotta have a second one to slow that water down so the solids will settle out, is basically what you're doing.
So it's more, in the winter, it's more natural elements coming through. Is that dirt?
Yes, I'd say so. We call it grit, you know.
I call it dirt.
Dirt, grit, and just water just comes in, you know, higher groundwater in flow and infiltration into the system.
Okay, thank you.
Will the master plan, I noticed you have, it won't be done until the end of 23, right?
That's my next slide.
That's the next slide, I know, yeah.
Right.
I'm looking at it, yeah. Will the master plan also address the pipe system and trying to find out where problems are in the pipe system, or?
Yes, so what they're working on right now is an update to the 2018 sewer system master plan, and that's going to take into account what we've done in our sewer system in the last 5 years and update that for growth and loading going forward. Every year we have a televising and an assessment program that's funded through the operating budget. That's going to continue this year. I don't think we did it last year. That's where there's a company that comes in and they actually TV the lion's share of our wastewater collection system. And what that does is it sets up a matrix of what are the most critical sewers to take care of in terms of what's broken and allowing infiltration to come in, those kinds of things.
I was even thinking, I was talking with Don Davis the other day, and he was previous city manager. And we were chatting about the sewer systems, and he was saying that, you know, the farther away you build a development from the sewer plant, the more pipe work you have to put in the future. So is that master plan going to address the rate of development that we're doing at the north end, and how we might have to increase pipe size and the cost of all that?
Yeah, that's what the master plan looks at is term, you know, what is the zoning and what is the projection of growth in those areas north of town? And then based on what that zoning looks like in terms of density, how does that contribute to the piping system and how does that impact the pump stations and all the downstream facilities that have to carry that wastewater?
Okay, good.
Thanks for that clarification and clarifiers. I was waiting for a minute to say that. So on the screening at the old sewer treatment plant down there on 3rd Street, do you see the screens getting clogged by man-made objects more in the summer or in the winter?
So I'll address that. So the screens see high loading events related to what's called first flush. So the first time you get some rainwater coming through or a large flow event, that's when the screens will get blinded because it mobilizes things that have been stuck in the sewer. Fat balls, largely what we pick up are wipes. Wipes are probably 90% of the screenings. Same thing with grit, which would be the settleable, it's like sand and pieces of asphalt that get flushed and enter the system. Those all come through in one big flush. So when we talk about capacity of screens, it's really about that max loading. That first flush is what we prepare for. Of important note is that the screens at Northside were designed before wipes were in the system. So wipes were like an epic in wastewater. It happened about 2010. And everything designed pre-wipe just doesn't really function with wipes. So those screens were part of another project to get replaced. And that's something that we're looking at as part of the master planning, is updating up the equipment so that it's compatible with our waste stream.
Has Oregon Associated Oregon, was it OAWU, have they lobbied like to LOC and to try to get state law updated about wipes? Because it seems like there's a big infrastructural cost with sewer treatment plants all around the state with this issue.
the Oregon Association of Clean Water Agencies lobbied through LOC, and there was a wipes bill passed. It's a wipes labeling law, so it got rid of the flushable. I think you can't even put flushable on the wipe itself, but I think I've been dealing with wipes for 15 years. They're not going away, and we just have to adapt our pumps and the way we do things to address this new waste stream. We saw masks for a little while, and now we don't see masks anymore. But yeah, wipes are definitely here to stay.
What do you think taking care of the wipes might be the cost on an annual basis? I don't know if you could even estimate it, but.
I can get back to you with a firm number on how much increased waste we've hauled.
Yeah.
But from my personal perception, it's more than double the amount of screenings that we take to the headworks. And again, it's a strange waste, and that it's an unwoven fibrous material. Mm-hmm. So it'll actually reweave itself. We can break them up and chop them up, and then the next process stream, they will bind back together like a fleece. So you really just have to redesign things.
I have read there are some localities where they put an upfront fee on them sold at the grocery stores, for instance. I'm just bringing it up.
What was that,
Cynthia?
Costs
us money.
What was that?
Some places put an upfront fee on the sale of hygienic wipes, shall we say, at the grocery stores.
Oh, is that right? Interesting.
So I think for people who haven't run a sewer plant, I have some limited experience running a smaller one, and I would say that there's a couple things. The environmentalist in me says, well, all that polyethylene fiber that's chopped up is just creating more and more pollution that can't be absorbed or harnessed under our current system. And so what is the state doing about helping small communities pre-filter out microplastic and microfiber pollution? Because it's right now it's not regulated at all at the state level. They don't even have a bead on it, in my opinion. And so most of the environmental efforts in Oregon start in the Portland area, and then the funding runs out. And so how can we lobby under this wastewater treatment master plan to put in filtration to screen out that pollution if possible? And what would that look like cost-wise? And is there a body of knowledge that we can tap into?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know of anyone that's specifically screening out polyethylene fiber. Our wastewater treatment plant is very high performing. We have 99% removal of solids. When we talk about wipes, it's much more efficient to remove things on the front end. We only have one grinder in the city. It's at the Nye Beach pump station because we were getting so many clogging events there. So when we talk about total flow of how much would be getting ground, I'm pretty confident that we're capturing most of it. But an updated plan with newer screens that don't involve so much human intervention. Currently, every day, someone has to go in and remove a big pile of wipes. That's part of the master plan, right? That's where we start to say, how are we going to look at these problems holistically and deal with them? And what process stream would they be captured at?
Do you still get a fair amount of towels and needles from the motels? I know that was a issue at first when they put the grinder in. That was one of the reasons.
Yes, we do. The grinder takes care of a lot of the towels and linens that comes down from the Nye Beach area. Syringes, I could talk about this for quite a while, but syringes are a constant threat to personnel.
Sure.
At any one point in our system, there are thousands of syringes.
Cynthia asked a great question about the baby wipes, and I talked to Tim Gross about this a couple of years ago, and he said it was your big problem. Are there anything other items that you see that we could maybe do a PR campaign and, put in bills and say, don't put wipes down here, pharmaceuticals, and maybe a list of, needles and other things.
Towels.
Towels.
Illegal drugs.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, we'd love to work with Eric and Peggy about getting something in a mailer out. We have some outreach materials ready to go, but I think the utility bill mailer would be the place to do that.
I know in the summer, the lift stations I clean in our sewer system, it's a whole lot of things in there, but I definitely notice our main sewer guy does more unclogging and snaking of pipe junctions in the summer when there's more solids. So regardless of plant size, that seems to be the issue with the city as well. Right now, you know, most of the commercial washers and dryers don't include inline filtration, but one of 49 states has a law, you know, California is going to require that by 2024. But no other state has acted on that, and so save for 50 different bills at 50 different legislative bodies around the country, it'd be nice to see Oregon leading with some sort of legislative concept about not another great Salem idea of unfunded mandates, but actual funded clean water services monies for wastewater treatment master planning, I think, is the next step that Oregon really needs to do. And I would hope that in your professional circles, we can start to make that a more cohesive talking point. Because if people, the inline filters that are on the market now are relatively expensive, and while they work great, they don't work on all models, and they're not being done at the commercial laundromat level, which, again, scale matters. So I think this is a big missed pre-pollution prevention opportunity that the state of Oregon is missing. And if the city could participate in any measurable way, that would definitely benefit our local environment.
You know, I'm not sure that putting out another piece of paper along with some other mailing would draw a good result. Maybe asking the motels to put up a permanent sign in their little bathroom or something. I don't know. Anybody have an idea?
If it's not toilet paper or brown, don't flush it down.
Also, just as someone who lives in a condo, I don't see the mailers unless they come to every residence, but I never see our water bills. So then I feel like that's a big gap that we're not getting to multifamily complexes potentially and such like that.
Well, with multifamily, that's exactly the target.
Yeah.
That's the scale. For example, the new apartments in Agate Beach, that's 100 and something units. And that's a deliverable, both with biological sewage and garbage and anything else. Any outreach efforts are always magnified at multifamily residences.
I have a question about biosolids, getting back to that. Toledo has talked about putting a plant in over there. I don't want to put you on the spot here, and I don't want you to have to go out on a limb, but is there anything further being discussed on that? Do you think it might be a success, or?
I wish them success. Toledo generates somewhere between 20 and 22 tons a year. We generate almost 800, so we outscale them by a lot. They had a presentation of a bench scale model to deal with waste, and to my knowledge, they're not going to do a full scale project in Toledo. It doesn't really make dollar sense to do that. But again, it's up for Toledo and their council to determine where their priorities are and what they're going to do with that.
Okay.
What was that again? Was Toledo can only take 22...
The production, the biosolids production, last I saw from Toledo was somewhere around 22 tons per year. And Newport last year was almost 800 tons.
I thought Toledo was talking about taking more than that.
No, that's what they're producing.
What they're producing.
From their plant. And the scale, the last thing I saw on it too, the scale of a facility that would really meet would require waste coming in from a lot of areas.
Right, that's what I thought.
Yeah, into Toledo in order to cover that, and whether that's feasible or not is a good question.
To Spencer's point, what Rod was, Mayor Cross was talking about was some sort of facility that, sort of a waste-to-energy hog fuel facility where they would they would incinerate biosolids, the way they would incinerate mill waste, but they would incinerate broken down fiber, leftovers after multiple cycles of making container board. I think it was sort of a hog field generator type waste to energy facility. And therein lies the issue of, would that be an abatement funded issue? They've already given GP a 15-year abatement on the Juno plant, so I don't know the tax basis to be able to support more of those types of arrangements. But the point is that to have such a plant, you need supply, right? And so I would be happy to see any reasonable proposal for such a waste energy plant. However, someone would have to fund it. And putting it out there that bonded debt in small cities, coastal cities, is a very hard sell for a lot of reasons, even if the infrastructural improvement would be beneficial.
Any questions? Wrap it up. Just one point I wanted to make was that one of the consultants has worked with, I think, the city of Florence to get a waste diversion grant as part of the funding for their wastewater plant. And we're going to be pursuing that as well, because we do take septage from outlying areas, and waste diversion grants are available for entities that do that. So hopefully that can add some money to the overall project. As far as the schedule goes, this summer is going to be really busy towards the fall with our alternative analyses, and then our CIP being produced, and then some workshops with council towards the end of the year, and then wrap this up soon after the first of the year. So that's our schedule and our hope to get it completed.
I think one of the important things in the planning process here is that once the needs are identified and the alternatives are reviewed, there's also an impact on rates issue that'll come at the end of this process. Because, again, with the reinvestment that's going to be necessary into this plant, there's going to be that's going to have a impact on the revenues that we have to operate wastewater. And so that's kind of the last phase of the work, if I recall correctly. Is that right?
That's right.
Yep.
Beatrice?
Yeah. I have a question, Spencer, about the meeting that we have, that we just went. They were talking about funding that is available, but you have to dig. The presentation that we have, they said they have money for infrastructure that maybe, you know, we can look and find. But I don't know if we had the capacity to look for that kind of information and, you know, to support, like, you know,
right,
this project.
Yeah, yeah. We just on that issue, we work with Dig Deep Research, and Dig Deep is the one that has been working extensively on the dam, you know, securing funding for the dam. But they also have taken a look at a number of wastewater and water projects for us as well. So that's, they're looking at some of these bigger programs. As you know, we've also included in the proposed budget a grant manager position for the next fiscal year that would allow us to really build our capacity to, doing more work and trying to identify these opportunities going forward. So this is a good time to get this plan done, because I think over the next 4 or 5 years, under the funding that's going to be available from the infrastructure grants, this is going to be a much better time to try to secure funding from the federal government than what we've certainly had over the last couple decades. So we'll see how that pans out. But we're trying to position ourselves to do that, and having a master plan with the identified needs and identified costs, and then having the impact on rates are key elements to, you know, justifying funding. So I think it'll put us in a much stronger position.
Okay, there's any other questions? That's the end of our presentation. We'll be back probably another 60 days with another update.
You did a good job of filling almost an hour.
Thank you.
I have lots of sewer puns. If you, I'll send you an email with some of my top performers based on recent feedback.
I bet some of them are real stinkers.
So I think we're ready to adjourn the work session. I think we do have lunch available.
Yep.
Here, great. We can grab that, and then we can roll into urban renewal.
Okay, with that, we will adjourn the work session, and we'll get ready for the urban renewal.
Very underutilized gavel there.
Good job. Noise pollution.
Oh, yeah. That's right.